Welcome to Alternative Dog Moms Podcast. I'm Kimberly Gauthier, the creator of Keep the Tail Wagging. For the past 9 years, I've been blogging about raw feeding, pet wellness, and life as a crazy dog mom. I've seen massive improvements in my dog's health since I started raising my dogs naturally, and I'm passionate about sharing my experience to help other pet parents.
I'm Erin Scott. For the past 9 years, I've been researching and learning everything I can about healing cancer, allergies, autoimmune, and mystery illnesses in both my dogs and myself, and I can't wait to share with you everything I've learned on this journey. As the Alternative Dog Moms, we're bringing you all the latest dog health news that we're following and sharing the tips, tricks, and resources we learn along the way. Now, let's get started. Hello, Kimberly.
Hello, Erin.
So we have a guest with us today. I'm really excited. You know, I work in the legal field, so I'm always excited when I can nerd out on legal stuff. So welcome, Sharina.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for being here today.
I've known Sharina for years. She helped me get my very first, what is it called? Trademark, Keep the Tail Wagging. And it's funny because I would never have thought to get it until I randomly got an email from someone asking me to write a letter stating that they came up with the name of my blog. And I was just like, no, that never happened. And then I decided I'm going to trademark it. And thankfully, you know, I had two options. I could do the like some type of legal thing online, pay a fee and get my trademark, or I can work with a professional. And because Sharina is in the pet space, I'm so grateful that I worked with her because we did come up with a hiccup with my trademark because I had to explain that I don't make dog food. I don't make dog treats. I think Purina had something that was kind of similar. And I had to be able to work around that just to get my trademark. And I would not have known how to do any of that by using an online service.
Well, I'm so glad we got to work together.
Yeah. So what brought you into the legal realm and why the pet industry?
Sure. Well, the legal realm, it's a long story. Let's make it short for today. I always wanted to be an archaeologist. So when I was an undergrad, I actually started my undergrad career as an anthropology major. And then I went on to do excavations in Europe. So I went and did Viking sites. You know, we actually did the digging, the excavating. Went to do Viking sites, and then I was invited back as a, you know, for free, basically, because they liked my work so much. So I went back and I did a second set of excavations also for the same type of work, for the same background. And then I started to realize that the older I would get, the less they would find me to be valuable in the outdoor space. So you'd kind of be tucked away in the back doing research, and that's not what I wanted to do. My excitement was actually going out into the field and actually doing the excavations. And that's not what you end up doing as you get older. And since we all get older, I had to think ahead. And so I realized that, you know, I just love traveling. I love history. I love meeting new people. So all of those things combined, I was like, hey, let's just try out law school. Why not? So I started political science as well. And then I graduated and I went to law school. So that's the legal realm. And I always actually thought I would be working in the personal injury area. So I worked during undergrad, after I decided that I was going to law school, I was working for various law firms. So I worked, this was in Buffalo, New York, so upstate New York, Western New York, as they like to call it, if anyone's listening from Buffalo. I know the lingo. So I worked for some well-known PI firms, personal injury firms in Buffalo. And then by the time I went to law school, I was still very much into having my billboard. You know, the billboards you see are all pretty much all for personal injury attorneys and like divorce lawyers. So I was like, hey, I can really see myself being on a billboard because it just looks fun and having my own practice. But after graduating from law school, I worked for a very sketchy law firm, let's put it that way. I had to work with professional plaintiffs, plaintiffs who were constantly getting in accidents. And, you know, it's not something I believed in anymore because I was seeing all that, you know, the other side that people kind of think of when they think of attorneys. And yeah. I didn't want to do that. So I explained that to my then boss. And he told me, well, why don't you just start a little portion of my firm and like work with entrepreneurs, because that's what I was really into, helping people start their own businesses. And, you know, it's a different type of success story that you see because you're working hard and you're really putting your time and effort into it. So I did that very successfully for his firm. And by that point, I was like, why am I not doing it for myself? Because if I could do it for someone else, I could do it for myself. So that's when I was like, that's it. Goodbye. So I left. I started my own practice. And this was at a really bad time for the legal industry, because it was in 2011, 2012, right around that time when not many people were hiring anyway. So I decided it was a good time to, you know, to get started. And once I started, as anybody else would tell you, any other business owner, it's really hard to get clients, no matter what industry you're in, you know, whether it be pet business, legal, maybe not medicine, because everyone needs medical professionals, but pretty much anything else. So it was no different for me. So I started going to a lot of networking events, trying to really figure out where I was going to focus. And I didn't really realize that I could actually pick an industry and really put my all into it. So I kind of had to figure that out, that it's not just about the practice areas, because I practice only four areas of law. So that's business, contract, trademark, and copyright. But I can also pick one or two industries that I really love personally, and I can really focus on that. Mm-hmm. So I ended up meeting this woman who works in the pet industry in New York City, who was telling me, oh, hey, have you ever checked out the events for the pet space? And that was brand new to me, because I had no idea there was such a thing. You know, we're talking about over 10 years ago now, like almost 12 years ago. So it wasn't such a booming industry as it is now. So I checked it out and I was like, hey, this is pretty cool. You know, I just loved the vibe. And so that was the beginning of the end.
Nice. I love it.
Anyone with that?
Well, you mentioned, you know, trademark. You also mentioned copyright. And so that's like a great segue into my first question, which is, you know, I think people who I hear from people who are new, primarily to the content creation space. And copyright is something that people do not understand. And what comes to mind is recently, I've spoken to three people in the past 2 months who were just going to go on Google and download images that they needed and use those to put on their website to make content out of. And each one I told them, you might be better off just paying for stock photography or making your own images, because, you know, there's copyright. But they thought in order for it to be copyright, there had to be like a logo on the image. And so can you talk about copyright and basically when it starts and the dangers of, breaking someone's copyright?
Yes, absolutely. So the way I like to explain what a copyright is very simply, it's a play on words, right? It's a right to copy, copyright. So if you don't have the right, if you don't have the explicit right to copy some sort of creative work, just don't do it. So what do I mean by creative work? It's writing, any written work, any photography, any artwork, music work, you know, lyrics, things like that. And also architectural drawings, those are all protected. So I have actually had, Kimberly, as you may imagine, a lot of instances where people just don't know that what they're doing is not right. And there's no malintention that's required in order for infringement to take place. So even if you tell them, hey, I'm really sorry, I didn't mean to, while your intentions are not going to save you from actually getting that lawsuit slapped on, right? If they really wanted to. So when you're online, I understand there's a lot of free, you know, free images in public domains, things like that. So a lot of people tend to assume that if it's on there without the C, is that maybe that's what you meant, that it's free for the taking, but that's not the case. If it's not yours and you haven't paid for it, I would just stay away from it, because a lot of the websites actually track who's been there, their IP addresses, you know, if you're downloading especially. they can track that. And there are certain businesses out there which depend on people downloading these things for free so they can get that lawsuit underway. And there's a statutory amount of damages that they can get just from the fact that you actually infringed. Whether or not you meant to doesn't really matter.
Gosh, I didn't even know all of that. I'm so grateful. Yeah, I mean, I think that, I mean, and like you said, I think people mean well. And, you know, it goes with the, if it's online, it must be true. And, or if it's online, it must be free. And it's just like, it's just, and one thing that I found is there's a lot of websites that offer free stock photography. And I find those to be a little sketchy as well, because that just means that anyone can upload images and you don't necessarily know if those images are those of the artist or the person who's uploading them. You don't know the people behind it. I just find it's just not worth taking the risk.
Absolutely. And even with the programs or the websites that allow you to purchase an image, right? You have to be very careful in understanding that you're not downright owning that image, because anyone else, like between the three of us even, we can all go and purchase, right? That same image. We just have a license to use it. The owner at the end of the day is still that website, whoever posted it. So don't assume for a minute that, you know, just because you're paying for something, you're not going to see that elsewhere. So tying that into, if you have a logo and you're using these online services, now it's a big business. You know, you just pay like $10 for a logo that you found online. Don't be surprised if then, you know, you also post it as your business logo, and then you get a trademark infringement lawsuit from someone that initially registered that. So it's always good to, you know, have a designer to design something brand new, completely from scratch for you. And they understand that you will be owner, you'll be the owner of all the intellectual property that stems from that design, that they don't own any right to it, that they're not going to be reposting it as something that's available for others to buy. Those are things you need to consider when you're using things from the internet.
We actually had a situation with the nonprofit that I'm a part of here in Baltimore, where before I ever had gotten involved with the organization, they had a logo. It was like a dog with like a leash. And like years later, someone contacted us and said that, I don't know if it was like their stock photography. I don't know. We had actually, my understanding and from the email chain, we had paid somebody to come up with a logo for the organization. That was what they presented us. I don't know if they got that off of a website somewhere and just put like our name on it. Anyway, we ended up just like having to sign a letter saying like, you know, we're a nonprofit, we're not making like any money commercially off it. It's just, you know, and, but it was really scary, you know, it's really scary to get those things. And especially when you think you did the right thing.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, just to put this in context for things that happen in the real life, in the real world with pet businesses, I have a client who's been developing, like a dentist stick type thing for dogs to chew on so their teeth are clean. Obviously, I'm not going to give out any names, but she was in the process of manufacturing all of this, you know, all the product itself and also the packaging. And she had a certain dog picture on the packaging, which she paid someone for, but she didn't have a contract between herself and the designer, which would have prohibited that designer from using it for somebody else. He or she, whoever the designer was, just ended up selling to someone else. And my client had now thousands of bags for these, you know, these dog chews printed. And I was the one that ended up seeing this the same dog at an expo on somebody else's packaging. And I was like, that doesn't look right. So thankfully, you know, I saw it, so she didn't put the product in the market. I sent her a picture. I was like, is this your dog picture? And she couldn't believe it, because this was, you know, the picture I took was from a much smaller, newer company. But they're out there, especially in a small world such as the pet industry. You have to really be careful about what you're using. There's only so many paws you could come up with, any designer, right? If you have paws, and only your only paws, right? Or like a heart with a cat and a dog. Those are very simple. I say simple because you see that often enough. So be mm-hmm. careful how your design is coming out. If it's not distinguishable from other products, other logos, you may face a problem that way as well.
I have a question about recipes, because what you're saying brings to mind, a lot of times bloggers will try to make like a homemade version of something. And I've always been very careful about that because I didn't want to infringe on someone's trademark. But for, you know, one that comes to mind is a brand that's local to me, Green Juju. And years ago, someone wrote an article that was like, here's a DIY Green Juju, but used all the, you know, Green Juju. I can't remember which one they did, but like, let's, for example, Bailey's Blend. And they basically just took the ingredients off the website. They didn't have the amounts, but they put in their own amounts. And like, here, you can make this yourself. I think they had a couple of substitutions for things that aren't easy for people to get. Mm-hmm. But I was wondering, in a situation like that, how what risk is there? Right. You know, because they could have just done a, like what I did is I just did a DIY veggie recipe.
Right.
But and didn't mention the brand at all. But, you know, they actually mentioned the brand.
Hey, quick question for you. Are you someone who wants to be fit, healthy, and happy? And what if I told you you could get your dream body by simply just listening to a podcast? I'm Josh.
And I'm KG, and we are the hosts of the Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast.
Listen, we get it. Fitness isn't easy. Carbs, no carbs.
Just stop, okay? It doesn't have to be that complicated. And that's why we made this podcast. We get straight to the facts so you can become your best you.
So the way to check us out is click the link in the show notes or search Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast on any of the major podcast platforms. We'll see you soon.
So taking a recipe that you don't know the amounts for, right? That's if you knew the amounts and you got it somehow that was not very kosher, then you're looking into another type of lawsuit, right? Maybe it was some sort of a secret recipe or something, proprietary matters. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about whether or not it's safe to use a brand's name and say, this is like that brand, right? More often than not, you may want to stop doing that because before the age of the internet, and I wasn't around really for that, from what I understand, you know, it was a lot harder for these types of cases to get traction. But now because of the internet and, you know, everything just moves so fast, if you mention a brand's name and say, this is like that product, you may have, they may have a claim against you for trademark infringement because you're mentioning their brand's name. That's why if you notice, you know, those iPhone chargers that you can get off market, like off, mm-hmm. off the label brands, they will never say iPhone charger. You'll kind of have to just know that they'll fit into your iPhone, yeah. Because Apple will come after them for trademark infringement. It's not that, you know, this actually works and, you know, there is some sort of hidden message behind that working. It's the fact that you're using that brand's name, which is protected by trademark. Mm-hmm.
Can you explain the difference for us of trademark and copyright and patent? I always think of as like a physical, like invented product, but maybe throw in patent too for all of us.
Sure. So I actually don't practice patent law, but I can tell you the difference of, you know, between the three. So there's three types of law under intellectual property law. So there's trademark, copyright. Those two I practice with clients all over the country. Patent, which I don't practice, and that's only for inventions. So, you know, inventions could be anywhere from medicinal inventions, you know, new medicines, new shots, things like that, formulations, because you want to keep it a secret. Basically, the patent will exist for X amount of years. And within that time, you can monetize from your invention. So that's the idea behind the patents. Trademark is the way I like to explain this one is the mark of your trade, right? So you actually need to have a trade. What do I mean by that? You need to have a business, right? Years ago in high school, I would say my eyeliner is my trademark because I literally always wear eyeliner. That's my thing. That couldn't be further from the truth because I don't have a trade. So it can't be my trademark. It's a, you know, it's a mis it's not the right way of using it. So if you don't have a trade, you can't really have a trademark. So a lot of people then wonder, well, what's a service mark versus a trademark? Nowadays, when you're applying for a trademark, there's really no distinguishing factor like SM or TM. It's just based on how you are qualifying or classifying your business. So to give an example of a service mark within the pet industry, like dog walking, grooming, you're not giving a product, right? Because if you had a product, that'll be a trademark. But it's a service mark at that point, which is, you know, because you're providing a service of either walking the dog or grooming the dog. A product, on the flip side, it could come from that same business, could be, you know, scissors that they're selling with their business name, or leashes that they're selling to the, you know, to the people that are hiring them to walk the dogs, things like that. So that would all fall under the USPTO, which is the United States Patent and Trademark Office. That's who you apply for your trademark registration. With copyright, it's only creative materials. So it's not your business name. It's not, I mean, it could be your logo. I shouldn't say it's not, but your logo needs to have a certain threshold of creativity in it. So let's say you just put a leaf, right? This actually happened to a client who insisted that we put in the application, even though I said, it's probably not going to go through. But she wanted to see, so we did it. She just had a leaf logo. It's just a plain leaf. And she wanted to see if we could also get protection from copyright, from the copyright office. And we didn't, because it didn't meet the minimum requirements for creativity, because you can't give someone the rights to just a plain leaf that has nothing else on it. Whereas trademark with the same leaf, which was her logo, she was able to get that because trademark doesn't have that threshold of creativity, as long as you're using it for your business.
My understanding, in not having anything to do with this kind of law, is like, if you, like Kimberly writes something on her blog or her website, or she publishes like an ebook or something, like you can put the C for the copyright yourself. That doesn't need to be registered. You can register it, but you don't have to register it to be protected. Is that right?
This is a great question, because copyright protection exists automatically if it's your original work, if you're not copying from somebody else. The moment that you affix it to a tangible medium, meaning you write it down or you type it up, right? That's a tangible medium, because when you type it, you can also print it or reproduce it. So it exists from the moment that you actually affix it to a tangible medium. However, if you want to sue someone, because let's say Kimberly posts these, you know, I know she posts a lot of amazing articles, but she decides not to register them with the copyright office. When it comes time to sue someone for infringing, she won't be able to, because registration is required for copyright infringement.
Oh.
I mean, you can go back and forth saying, hey, I had it first and they're just copying. You can start a lawsuit. I'm not saying you can't, because we're a very litigious country, so we're starting lawsuits for everything. But it's going to be drawn out, and you're going to be spending and or wasting a lot of money if you don't actually have a registration. So, to give you a real life example, when my clients are accused of copyright infringement, I always ask to see the registration number. And it's like, hint, hint, we're not going to play this game. So they usually go away if there's no registration number. So if you have something that you really value, an article or whatever that you're posting online, register that first.
Yeah, I registered my books. And I think my website is registered, but not just every article. I found that I rarely have people copy my articles, but it does happen. Mm-hmm. And I think it's called a DCIM takedown notice. Mm-hmm. If you send them a takedown notice, usually that's enough, and notify Google. And right. Google can see, okay, yours was posted on this day and theirs was posted on this day. And here's the clear areas of copying. And Google, in my experience, can have a website taken down within 30 minutes if you catch them at a good time. Yeah, it's if it's someone, because I've had people copy my entire website, and I've had that happen a few times. It was years ago, but now I don't know.
It's mind boggling that someone would even think that it's okay to just go ahead and do that. But
oh yeah, I've had people argue with me saying that they were helping me by sharing my content. And I was like, no, You share with the little icons. That's what you don't just copy and paste it. Right. But a lot of people don't understand. They honestly think that it's perfect. Like they're quoting it, but it's just like, you know, when you want to quote something, you quote like a couple of sentences. You don't quote paragraphs of work. I mean,
that's, and you give attribution.
Exactly. And, but I do think that it is a common misconception, especially when you have, like, we don't really see them that much anymore, but you know, when people would have forums or groups, and so you could, because it was behind kind of a privacy thing, you had to be a member to see it. You could copy and paste articles and throw them in there. And, you know, some people just got used to that type, you know, when the internet was kind of new and there weren't any of these rules around it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the easiest thing to do if you really love someone's work and think that they're worth copying that badly, just ask them if you can use it. You know, more than likely, they'll just agree if you give them the credit for it. So there's no need to go stealing, because by doing that, you're really opening yourself up for a lot of potential problems.
So
when it comes to social media, how does that change when you're posting something on, you know, Instagram or Facebook? Like, you know, if you make your own graphics or your own content, and, you know, how does that change? Like, if somebody else just wants to take your wording and throw it on their background or something, is there anything that can be done there, or is it just the Wild West still?
Well, just to start that conversation off, I will say that the legal system has a long way to go to catch up to social media. Now with AI, it's just, who even knows at this point? We're going to have years of like gaps that we'll be trying to figure out just by saying, oh, if this happened, maybe that's what the outcome should be. But we haven't caught up with, you know, how fast the technology is going. Now, with that said, anytime you post anything on social media, you are agreeing to that platform's terms of use and privacy policy. So I believe right now, if I'm not mistaken, and I, you know, it's because I don't really read those for fun most of the time. anytime you do use a platform, you're agreeing to the terms of use. So, you know, either you use their platform or you don't. There's not like, you know what I've seen? I'll just take a little segue here. Sometimes on Facebook, especially, I would see things like, not mine, not used with permission, but not claiming any rights, or something crazy to that effect. Or my favorite one is, I do not consent to Facebook using my content. Well, you're using it on Facebook, so it really doesn't do anything. So every time you're posting on a platform, you're agreeing to a different set of rules, right? A different set of terms that they have put out. They will have some rights to it. I believe Instagram claims that you are still the copyright holder of your materials, but you give them all the rights to use them anywhere. So the reason I was looking into it is I was at a restaurant one time and I kept seeing these like cute puppy videos on loop that people posted on Instagram and TikTok. And I was like, there is no way they're going around getting permission from all of these users to put them on TV. So they must have just, you know, gotten a license from those platforms to use their content. So every time you're posting, just keep in mind that those terms and conditions could change at any time. And they could use your materials any way they can. However, you as a user should be very careful about what you steal from other people. And I say steal because people are now just like downloading things off of other people's profiles and just using it as their own. It's almost like they have a double life using someone else's material. So that's not allowed. You don't have the right to use somebody else's work. I know there's Remix right now that are, you know, that's very popular. That's okay because that was introduced by the platform. You're still not stealing. But the second that you start claiming that someone else's work is yours, that's when the problem happens. One of the biggest ones I've been seeing is the use of audio. Now, if I started using, just to give you a very blunt example, if I, you know, if I just downloaded some guy's voice talking, and, you know, I was doing my it was like a voiceover, right? Obviously, I don't have a man's voice, I hope, that when I upload it, if it shows up as my original audio, that's a problem. Mm-hmm. If I'm using it the way that Instagram intended for it to be, you know, where you can see who the original work, work mm-hmm. comes from, that's okay. But unfortunately, even big name celebrities, they download it first and they upload it as audio, and that's not good. So that's an infringement issue right there.
Yeah.
We mentioned AI, and, you know, how long will it take the laws to catch up with how to understand, you know, the use of AI? It all makes me nervous, but Kimberly and I did grow up before the internet and remember the movies showing the robots taking over the world. So yeah, these things scare me a little bit, but you know, yeah, like if you, can you put a prompt into AI and just copy and paste that? And do you own that? Do they own that? How does any of that work?
So that's like a really hot topic debate issue with, amongst lawyers right now. So what I'm hearing is that whatever prompt you're putting in, that prompt will belong to you. However, what comes out after the prompt may not completely belong to you because it's not really all your work. So that's as much as I know. That's literally where it is with the forums and everything. But we are very far behind, you know, with like the, you know, judges and everything coming up with new case law. That's really what needs to happen,
right?
Is for things to start getting screwed up so it could get to court so we can make new laws and those will be applicable. So it's going to be some time before we start seeing a new case book of these things, because it's, you know, it's literally just happening now.
Yeah. So I don't know if this sort of maybe the final question that I have, but one thing that as a content creator, I do a lot of product reviews. And over the years, I've been doing this for a long time, and I have reached a point where I prefer to just go and buy a product and just review it on my own, because I find that that's safer. I feel more comfortable in saying what I want to say rather than feeling like I have to be positive because someone said something to me. That being said, I've always wondered where the line is between just being honest about your thoughts on a product and going too far where they now can possibly sue you for libel or slander or defamation. And I know that's not your legal expertise, but I was wondering, based on what you've seen in the pet space, because I have seen people get sued or sue someone because they, you know, what comes to mind is a disagreement over coconut oil and whether or not it's beneficial for dogs. And that froze me. And I didn't do product reviews for a year because I was terrified that someone wouldn't like what I said and would sue me.
Okay. Yeah, sure. So the three things that you mentioned, slander, libel, and defamation, they're all premised on the notion that there is some lie into, you know, whatever you're putting out there. As long as you're being truthful in your review, and as long as you're saying this is in my opinion and not showing it as a fact, there shouldn't be anything that they can really come after, mm-hmm. as far as I can see. I mean, what they can't really prove that you are lying if you're saying it's your opinion. And, you know, what you mentioned about this, the products that you review being bought instead of being given to you for free, I think that's more of a feeling bad on your own than like a legal situation, unless mm-hmm. they're giving you a contract in which they're like, hey, you must give me a positive review or, you know, there's going to be issues. Obviously, you can maybe get into situations like that, but I don't think that was in your case. So I think it's just something that you personally feel bad about, whereas it's not really a legal issue. Mm-hmm. But I think as long as you are honest about what you're presenting, you know, and you're not putting out any false information, and you make it very clear that this is your opinion, and if you're not an expert in something, just mention that, make it clear. And I think that should be sufficient. I don't see any grounds for, you know, any lawsuit after that.
Yeah.
So I do remember that from paralegal school, that truth is the defense to, you know, these types of torts. You're not making something, you're not making up that you had a bad experience, like that was your honest experience. Right. So for people who are in that influencer content creator kind of space, should they be getting contracts when they do things like this to spell out the terms so you don't have to worry about these kinds of things?
For reviews or just in general, like working as an influencer or a content creator?
Well, specifically for reviews, but we can also talk more generally.
It's always a good idea to have a contract and not just have a contract and sign it blindly. Actually have someone review it for you if you're able. I know sometimes funding is a problem and it's not always feasible to hire an attorney. But, you know, I will always recommend that because here's something that I don't like to say, but I will say it anyway. It's better to not sign a contract than to sign a bad contract. What I mean by that is when you don't have a contract at all, and by no means am I, you know, telling you not to get a contract. That's not what I'm saying. It's better to not sign a bad contract, because if you sign a bad contract with bad terms, a judge is going to say you agreed to them knowingly. But if you didn't have something, if you didn't have a written contract in place, at least then it's negotiable, right? Like, oh, this is the reasonable person's thought process that we can put in to, you know, your situation and then come up with a conclusion. But signing a bad contract is detrimental to any type of business, whether, you know, it's a blogging business, it's a influencer business, whatever the case may be. Have a good contract. You can even have one drafted that you can give out. You know, that way it's beneficial to you, right? More than the other party. Do that so you don't get in trouble. It's for across the board.
Yeah, doing that also, yeah, spelling out clearly what you're going to be delivering, you know, when you're going to deliver it, what it's going to look like, I find to be so very, very important. Because I think that, you know, when it comes to small businesses in particular, they put their heart and soul behind the products that they produce. So when someone isn't 100% as stoked on a product as they are, it does feel like a personal attack. And that's when things, you know, like people start hinting at lawsuits. So that's kind of like why I prefer to just buy things. One, because as a small business, they can't always afford to just be giving stuff away for free all the time. And two, I buy the stuff that I know I'm going to want. If I know for a fact that I'm not going to be interested in a product, I won't even bother reviewing it, because it's just sort of like, it's not going to be a great review because I'm going into it like I wouldn't buy this. So it's like, why even bother with the hassle?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, as you were talking about the reviews, I was just thinking there's so many influencers out there that go and sample food products for themselves, for humans, at different restaurants. There's no lawsuits for that, right? Because they're giving their honest truth as to what they think about each of the dishes. So really, it's not any different from you reviewing a product, as long as you're not making things up. As long as you're not making those things that you're saying out to be facts either.
Mm-hmm. And so is the same thing true for people like leaving comments on social media? If they have a bad experience, or they've heard somebody had a bad experience and they're trying to like warn others, like if that's the honest truth, is there any concern for them sharing that opinion?
I mean, will it ever stop anyone from going after you if they really wanted to? No, because, you know, there are frivolous lawsuits everywhere. So it's really hard for me to even fully explain that to people who are not looking to hear that message, right? Just because it's the truth doesn't mean that someone else will not try to come after you. It's just the nature of the game. But as long as you're being truthful, I think, you know, once again, that's just a review. And, it, you know, in the US, we protect opinions as long as they're not hurting others.
So if there are people who are new to getting into like the pet influencer, pet content creation space, are there certain things that they should do to protect themselves right from the start?
Yes, absolutely. So You know, I usually ask this question whenever I do in-person presentations. I'm like, hey, how many of you guys have a business? And then I ask how many of you are thinking about starting a business, you know, just to get an idea of who's in the room. And, you know, they'll raise their hands, all of them would at some point. And then I ask how many of you have thought of marketing? They're like, oh, yeah, me, you know, I got my handle and everything is all set up. And then they're thinking about marketing, advertising, doing this and that, freebies. Then I ask, have you ever actually thought about protecting your name? Because you're really out there trying to go viral, but you haven't protected your name. So by going viral, yeah, it's great. Your product's going to be out there, but so will your brand identity. Have you protected that? Answer most of the time is no. So you need to tie up those loose ends before you start wanting to go viral, right? So do it as soon as you can. Ideally, your handle should be your business name. So that should be protected with trademark. And if you're using your logo online as well, that should also be protected with trademark. One question that does come up if I'm talking about social media is, can I prevent someone from using hashtags? Believe it or not, this is a very common question I get. No, you can't prevent someone from using a hashtag, because the whole point of using hashtags is so it catches on fire, right? So you can't do it. You would hope that other people would like the hashtag so much that they'll contribute to it. You can't prevent people from using it, even if you have that word trademarked. So, you know, keep the tail wagging. If someone, let's say I tagged it. I would hope that Kimberly doesn't get mad and is like, oh, I'm going to sue her for using it. And first of all, it won't work, because I'm not using it as my business name, right? I'm using it to like say, hey, I like your product, you know, something like that. So you can't really prevent people from using hashtags. For some reason, this is a huge question for everyone. Like, can I just stop people from using it? Like, no, you can't. So yeah, going back to what you were asking, anything else on that one?
No, like, should people start like an LLC right off the bat, or, you know, when do things like that come into play?
Sure. So, when you're ready to start a business, it's always good to speak to a small business attorney, you know, like myself and an accountant. Those are your two best friends at the very beginning to the very end, really, to see which entity would be the best suited for you. There are various questions I ask if you're doing a consultation before we start a business for you. It depends on, you know, like the size. If you're planning on hiring somebody, are you looking for funding? You know, what your goals are for the near future. They'll all depend on you, like what you want out of the business. And then I can tell you which entity is better suited for you right now. And it can always change in the future. But for, you know, that moment in time, there is a better option than the others. And yeah, sorry, I don't know if I even answered the question. Definitely start a business entity before you start selling, because as soon as you start selling or providing your goods and services into the stream of commerce, you are opening yourself up to liability, especially if you don't have that barrier between your personal assets and your business assets. And you have some personal assets, let's say a house, a car, whatever, they can come after you because there's no business shield for you there. So definitely start it right away. Speak to someone. They can help you, you know, to decide which entity is the best for you. But don't just go out, you know, working from your kitchen, nothing to protect you legally. Definitely have an LLC or a corporation or something there to hold your business assets separately.
So are you a dog mom?
I am. My dog is actually right here. He's staring at me. yeah, he's my, I actually tell my kids that he's my favorite child, and they're like, oh, that's not fair. I'm like, oh. I had him first. He's all over my Instagram as well. So yeah, he's my baby. Oh. And I'll bring him.
Okay. I only have two in the room.
She's being very good. She's all covered up here in the dog bed.
I know.
Oh, Merlin.
In the little sweater.
I love dog sweaters.
He's 10 years old, so I've he's been my baby for a very long time.
Oh,
nice.
You're the only one of us that could comfortably hold their dog in their lap.
I can pick Bella up, but she acts like, you know, I'm putting her in Sky jail whenever I pick her. She's not a puppy anymore, but also she's only 50 something pounds. So she's the only dog that I can pick up. I know, I'm used to big dogs. So
this guy's 8 pounds.
Oh, wow. What a good boy. He's just being so good, chilling there. Got his snowflakes
on in his old age.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us, because I think a lot of this information, so many of us take it for granted, and we don't realize we stepped wrong until that letter arrives in the mail. And then it's just like, so I really appreciate your time and your knowledge.
Thank you so much for having me. I really, you know, enjoy talking to you guys. Kimberly, it's always good to see you. So thank you.
So Kimberly, we just hung up from talking with Sharina, but there was a huge announcement today, and I felt like we couldn't let this episode end without mentioning it.
Green Juju has raw food now. Not freeze-dried, but actual raw food. And so...
so excited.
I am blown away, because a lot of people, when they come out with a raw food brand, they're coming out with beef and chicken and maybe a third protein. But they are doing pork, lamb, rabbit, goat, and beef. And not only is it coming out in... as sliders, but you get patties, but there's also the bulk boxes. So people like me who have multiple dogs, I prefer to buy it in bulk because it seems to be a little cheaper per pound when you buy it that way. And that way, you know, because I can go through a bag in a day, and that's kind of painful when you think about how much some of these commercial raw brands cost. I don't want to spend that much on a daily basis.
And it sounds like, from what I was seeing, that it'll be more cost effective than buying the freeze dried version, which I do like buying the freeze dried with Nessie, because I've actually used it like as treats, like training treat. I just, because she's getting so much of it, you know, so much right now with so much training that, you know, I just cut her food, you know, her other food back. And, you know, I feel comfortable that, you know, everything is still balanced or whatever.
I was really surprised about the protein levels, because this is a very protein rich food, which to me, it explains the cost as well, because meat is going to be more expensive than vegetables. But I was looking at the post on Instagram, and it says the protein to plant ratio, every recipe includes 92% proteins and 8% plant ingredients.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I feel like it's really going to be a gold standard product.
Yeah, you know? I agree. And it doesn't say in this post, but I'm going to guess that it'll be HPP. Did you see that anywhere?
I feel like I did see that, or I at least saw Billy talking about HPP again, like very recently. And so I was assuming that that meant that this was going to be HPP'd.
I don't have a problem with that. I mean, I know that I get why people have an issue with HPP. I don't. And the reason why is because I feel like HPP opens up feeding fresh food to more people. If someone is concerned about feeding raw, if their veterinarian will better support them because they're choosing an HPP product. I think it depends on the process and what they're doing. And with the Green Juju, I know that they wouldn't use a process that would severely limit, you know, nutrients in a diet that they're producing. So they're not going to go through this process and then offset, you know, any loss with a bunch of synthetic ingredients. You know, it's not their style. So I give their food actually to my cat, even though it is dog food. My cat loves the rabbit. And I sometimes splurge on the rabbit a few times a year to give to him. He has tried the beef, but I want him to try the goat and the lamb to see how he likes it, just so I can have something other than he loves the small batch chicken and he loves the Quest pork. And what's funny is that I've tried like the Quest beef or the Quest chicken. No. He likes the Quest pork and he likes the small batch chicken, not the small batch beef, the small batch chicken. So he seems to be really crazy about the Green Juju. So I want to try more of the products. I was hoping that they would have a fish one.
Oh, that would be good. Yeah, I would definitely buy that. We have been rotating Nessie on fish. By the way, her feet are looking so much better.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Nice. Is she still hesitant about you touching them?
Yes.
It'll probably take a while. But that's so good that her feet are looking better. So what do you think the trick was?
Well, I do think she does really well on a fish-based food, but she's also done well on turkey. Mm-hmm. And I have added in extra colostrum, like where she'll get that like away from her meal times, like on an empty stomach. And I feel like that's been really healing for her.
Was it your idea to feed it that way, away from a meal?
I think that's what... With the product I have, I think that's what the instructions are.
Okay.
With Nino, I was adding it to his meals just to help with his digestion. You know, like it would help like calm things down if he was getting it with his meal. But with her, I was specifically making sure to do it away from the meals.
Okay, that's interesting.
And I feel like that helped everything else we were doing, like all kind of start to like work together. So. Yeah. We're working on some paw training now, and she's really good about shaking, you know, and giving paw. And so my trainer friend was like, just work on holding her paw like a little longer each time, you know, and like, or trying to like touch her toes individually, like while you're holding, you know, her paw, just to like get her used to that. Because Tim finally did break down and say that we could order one of those nail boards.
Okay.
Because it was one of those things where he kept saying, oh, I could make one of those. I could make one of those. And I'm like, look, you've been saying that since we had Penny. So we're going to just buy one.
Tell Tim, don't feel bad. The laundry room at our house is still not done. It started in 2020. It is 2024. It's almost finished. I mean, it's workable. We can use it, but there's still, but you know, that life happens. So how's Nino doing?
So he had one of his attacks last week. It was the first one that he had had probably that bad since like October or November, where it went on until like 3 o'clock in the morning. And I was like exhausted and like crying because I was so tired. You know, it's funny. Our vet had asked what we had done differently, if we had done anything differently that day. And Tim didn't realize what I was feeling guilty about. And I didn't realize what he was feeling guilty about until we were at the vet. And so unbeknownst to me, he had fed Nino a Chick-fil-A French fry that day. And Nino has been on a very strict no-fat diet and nothing cooked in fats or anything. And I had been making my soup, and it was like 10 o'clock at night because I'm a crazy person. And that was one of the time I had to do it then. And I was like cutting up carrots, and you know, I had the shreds from the carrot peels. And so I had given him like a couple of those. And I had thought, because this attack started about an hour later with him like hacking, coughing. And so I thought like maybe one of the carrot like peel shreds had like been stuck in his throat or something. And that's what like started all this, which to me makes more sense than like the
French fry
that had been like, you know, hours earlier. But anyway, I don't know if that's part of what contributed to it, but it was this whole, you know, just the whole thing where it like swallowing and drooling, and we do feel like there's some part of it is like a panic attack where he's like, oh god, it's happening again, and then it's like, he can't calm down, you know. And he was like, he'd be outside eating grass and then want to come back in. And so that's what was just going on until 3 a.m. was like he would just wake me up every like half an hour or so, and then he'd be out there for like 10 minutes, and then we'd come back in, and then I'd try to lay back down, and then, you know, he's wanting to get back up again. And so the good news is, ever since that incident, I feel like this whole issue has been like trending better.
Okay. That's good.
I don't know, but it's, like I thought we were doing so good.
It's so rough. It is. It's so rough. I mean, well, my dogs are fine.
Good.
Bella just walked into the room, and she's all wiggly right now. but she, I think I've already spoken about this, but she absolutely refuses to walk on the Centennial Trail now, which is such a bummer because I open the door and walk straight to the trail and I walk my dogs. I can walk for miles and miles in either direction, but not anymore with Bella. She has finally said, I'm not going to try this anymore. We're done. So I have to take her places to walk her. And last week I took her to my friend's property. She did absolutely great. So we're going to do that again today. And now she's drinking water super loudly. But we're going to do that again today. But Apollo, I mean, so my walks on the trail are basically just Apollo, sometimes Bella, sometimes Zoe. Because I don't like to leave Bella by herself, even though she's just fine. But I'll take the other two. But it's hilarious that, yeah, she just refused. I keep trying. And she's just like, no, I'm not doing it. I am not doing it.
Well, it's good that you're respecting that, you know.
Yeah. I mean, and people often ask, well, what happened? Nothing happened. She just doesn't like it. She doesn't like things coming up behind her. Even if she hears them and sees them coming, she does not like that because she's like, what are you going to do? When she sees people ahead of us coming, she's like, what are you going to do? Nothing bad has happened. She just doesn't like these like bicyclists coming close to her. She doesn't like a bunch of joggers. Usually, you know, if it's one jogger, she's okay. But if it's a group, like three people or more, which we have because we have high school's track teams run on the trail, she doesn't like that. And there are like the elliptical bicycles, the ones that are just like, yeah, she doesn't like anything like that. And there's also the motorized bicycle. Yeah, it's basically the Centennial Trail is a hellscape for her. Aww. And she's not a fan. So I'm grateful that I have a different place to take them. But health-wise, everyone's doing great. Oh, I did send off the kit, the Oncotec kit. I sent that off on Saturday. So I hope to get the results early next week.
Yeah, we'll have to talk about that.
Yeah. And that's about it.
Well, we have also learned that Nessie does not like motorized scooters. Mm-hmm. And there's a kid in our neighborhood that drives one at various times that we have not been able to predict. And she weirdly does like motorcycles. But like she gets so excited and like wants to like run to them that it's still like very reactive, mm-hmm. you know, but it's not like I'm scared or an I'm angry. It's like, oh my God, that's really exciting and fun looking. And so we were like pondering, like, was she at some point have somebody that she lived with that had a motorcycle? And that's, you know, she has a very positive, excited, whether we're in the car or like out in the neighborhood. And it's like a very, so we had like this great weekend. Like she came to work with me Friday. We had a great day together. We had this great hike with Tim and Nino on Saturday. And then she went and met my parents, and she hadn't actually met my parents yet. So they got to meet their grand dog for the first time. We had this great day together. And then Sunday was like a trigger stacking event. And it was like, first some guy goes by the high school with a motorcycle and keeps like riding around the parking lot, even though there's like 800 speed bumps. I don't know what the point of that was. And then we encountered a loose dog in our neighborhood that Nessie scared off and made me really upset, because apparently later I realized on Facebook in our neighborhood that people have been looking for this dog for like a week. And I was trying to like report that I saw her, but I'm like, I just know the direction she took off running because Nessie scared her away. It was like this little tiny poodle mix thing. And then we're like, oh my God, we just need to get home, because she was just like, so like, you know, worked up. And we're trying to get back home. And there's a family that had, I don't know, like half a dozen children that were like all very young and in strollers and little tricycles and all of these things. And they're all walking a dog together, past our house. But because of all of the children and this whole entourage of things, it took them like 20 minutes. It felt like 20 minutes to like get past our house. So we were just kind of like standing on the corner and like, we can't get home until these people are like mm-hmm. done moving past. Cause she's standing up on her two hind legs and just freaking out. And I'm trying to like drag her down the sidewalk and that dog's getting all worked up. And I'm like, we're just trying to like, it was just a trigger snacking day, you know? And my shoulder is still sore. I'm going to the chiropractor tomorrow.
I think I didn't have as bad of a trigger stacking day, but I can't, was it, I think it was Saturday that I, Saturday or Sunday, but no, it was Saturday. I took the dogs for a walk. And I took them, there's an airport in our town and there's walking trails all around the airport. And I took them, not really, I will not do this on a Saturday again because there was also a softball game.
Oh, geez.
So tons of cars, tons of kids. They didn't come near us, but, and they weren't the trigger. As we're walking, because, you know, it's spring in February now, at least on this side of the country, we've decided we're not doing winter this year. the squirrels are out. And my dogs, Zoe saw them first. And she, when she see, it's so funny because she's such a, like a, an agreeable dog and she walks, she does everything. But when she spots a little critter, she freezes. And I forget how strong she is. I'm pulling her, trying to get her to come on, calling her name. And she's like, nope, I see something. And so she saw the squirrels first and they were everywhere. And I wanted to just yell, like, you see me walking, you know, the animals that will be more than happy to kill you and eat you, yet you're just standing here. I mean, I guess they know that they're on leash. And so they're just like, ha, ha, ha. And so they were running everywhere. And at one point in time, there were three squirrels running.
Oh my God.
And Zoe started the barking and pulling. Apollo saw them and he's 80 pounds. So Zoe's 67 pounds. He's 80 pounds. So he starts barking and pulling. Bella doesn't know what's going on. So she just starts barking and pulling just in solidarity. And I finally just had to let go of the leashes because it's like they are pulling me too hard. And luckily they were going in a direction where they couldn't just run off. They were cornered. And so I let them run. I knew the squirrels would get away, which they did. And I went up and I picked up everyone's leash and we continued on our walk. But it was one of those where I'm waiting for the person, because every now and then you come across that person that's like, maybe you should get some training for your dogs. The person that just pushes you right over the edge. And yeah. I'm just sort of looking at my dog like, please don't do that again. And after that, they were actually very well behaved for the rest of the trip. They saw some more squirrels, some birds that landed, and Apollo decided he wanted to do a repeat. I think Zoe was like, she looks like she's had enough. And so I'm going to stop. And Apollo was just like, no, I think I can get a little more out of her. But I just basically made him walk right next to me. And then he realized, oh, okay, so she's done with my shenanigans. And we made it home. So, it's dogs.
So I know you've already talked about this on social media, but the other thing we feel like we should comment on is the DCM lawsuit.
My gosh.
How validating was that?
I am so amazed that that is happening. I am stunned. I'm shocked. I'm everything. When I saw that, Chelsea Kent, the founder of Solutions Pet Food, texted me one morning. And when I saw that, I was just like, I know people made comments about this, you know, and kind of said, you know, these people should be held accountable. Because I remember there was a study that they put out and I remember talking to Dr. Kozier about it. And we were like on a Zoom, not recording, just on a Zoom talking, or maybe we were on the phone. It doesn't matter though. But she and I were talking as we're going through the study and finding errors. I found one. So I'm just going to say that because they said something like Darwin's pork recipe. And I'm like, Darwin's doesn't have a pork recipe. But Lori Kozier just, it was like every paragraph had errors in it. I just mistakes all over the place. And it's just sort of like they're running so fast to prove their theory that they've given up on all the other possibilities. Because I truly think that it's not so much grain-free, it's the replacing proteins with legumes, or getting the protein from legumes, and how some legumes act as a nutrient blocker, which can decrease the amount of taurine a dog is getting over time. And I was so surprised that they didn't examine that
issue.
And it does make it seem like, because of their connections with kibble companies, the reason why they didn't is because these companies liked using legumes in place of animal proteins. So they didn't want to let us know that that could possibly be a problem. So they leaned heavily in this other direction. They built this huge group, this huge community. There were 20 people from my co-op back then that stopped feeding raw because they were afraid that if they didn't add grains to their dog's raw diet, their dogs would get DCM, because for some reason people walked away from all of that thinking grains prevented DCM. And gosh, I remember just some of the hateful conversations that people would have. One person told me that raw feeding causes DCM, and I asked them to provide me the support for that. And they were like, well, I don't have it with me, but you can Google it. And I'm like, I did Google it and I couldn't find anything about that. They're like, well, it has something to do with the sulfur. And it's like, that's not true. You're just making stuff up. Just, you know, and it's like, there's nothing wrong with saying, hey, this diet may have resulted in my dog getting DCM. But when you're like just basically attacking everyone and trying to prove that every diet out there causes DCM, except for this, except for these two.
That except for the ones that my company sells.
Yeah, exactly. It was very shady, and it was very like, and I cannot believe that they are potentially going to be held accountable for that, because, you know, to sit there, I don't know these people personally, so I want to believe that in the beginning, there wasn't a meeting that said, you know how we can make some more money, guys. I want to believe that that didn't happen, that they just really believed that this was a situation. They were seeing all these cases of DCM, and this is what a commonality was. And so they started building the science to prove their theory. And it wasn't, you know, they weren't able to prove it. But they were so convinced that this is the case, and the companies got behind them. I don't know who got behind who, but I would hope to think that that's not what they intended to do. But the second they realized that they could not support their theories, they should have stopped spreading that message. And they should have been transparent and said, we can't prove this.
I'm so excited. I'm still kind of going through it all in detail with my nerdy, you know, legal eye of things that I learned at work. And, you know, this is something that for 20 years now, you know, I've been seeing just in my professional life is like industry funded science to muddy the waters. Mm-hmm. You know, that there's like certain things that are like established, and but maybe if we like pay people enough or just like publish enough papers, it'll just muddy the waters a little bit in our favor. And I guess I'm so disgusted by that. I'm so disgusted that science gets used in that way. I'm so disgusted that scientists can be bought. We like require that they produce all their like agreements and, you know, and it's like tens of millions of dollars in, you know, the industry that I deal with at work, and that there's like certain like companies that it's like, oh, if they're from that kind of company, it's like bought and paid for science. Like whatever you want to prove, you know, they're the people to go to. They'll find a way to prove it.
Yeah.
You know,
Well, I had someone recently ask me if I was concerned about the fact that feeding raw meat can cause paralysis in dogs. And that's based on an Australian study. And I think it was like 70 dogs in this study. And I can't remember the details of it, but they made this connection. But how many people actually go and read the study?
Nobody.
You know, they see a title and that there is a study, you know, study finds, and there, that's enough for them. And the only reason why I dig more is because I've come across too many titles that was like, that doesn't make sense. So I always look how many dogs were involved in this study. You know, who's behind the study and who are they connected to? And do they have a vested interest to tilt the results one way or the other? Were, you know, certain results kicked out of the study? Like this didn't prove, so we're going to narrow it down until we get the results that we want. There's so many things that you need to look to because, you know, correlation does not equate causation, but this doesn't stop people from trying to spread a narrative to support their business or what they believe. And, you know, we can't be naive to think that every study out there is legit.
So I'll definitely be paying attention to the docket in this case to see what gets filed next and to see what else comes out. And I'm excited to see where this goes and to see some accountability like this.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
All right, everybody, until next week.
Talk to you guys later.